Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
There. Welcome to episode number 18 of the Everything Coworking Podcast. As I mentioned in the last episode, we're doing a little bit of a switch up on the format. I'm doing a couple of kind of how to or have you wondered what to do about this type of episodes for folks that are starting coworking spaces or thinking about starting coworking spaces or are up and running but are wondering kind of how other folks are handling certain topics. So today we're going to talk about two somewhat unrelated things, but I thought I'd throw them together: phone service and 24/7 access. So a lot of folks wonder what to do about phone service. Doesn't everyone work on their cell phone these days? Yes and no. So everyone has a cell phone, mostly. In the U.S., I should say this is pretty U.S. specific based on my experience. So if you're not in the U.S., certainly let us know how you're handling phone service in your area and if you have more demand than folks in the U.S. do for landlines. So how do I decide if I'm going to do phones in the space? So I would say you probably don't need to until you open. Be prepared to know how you might approach this if it happens, but wait and see what your members demand. If you can find that out in advance, if you're building a community before you open or doing some pre-sales, which is an excellent idea, then definitely survey some folks and see what they're thinking and see what they need so that you can be more prepared. But if not, it's not a hard thing to add on. Well, here's what you have to think about to add it on later. So what you should consider doing is hardwiring your offices with Ethernet ports. If you're going to do offices, not everyone will, but if you're going to mix in some office spaces, then do some hardwiring. This will allow folks to directly connect to the internet, bypassing the Wi-Fi, and use either a phone or Skype or Vonage or something like that and have a stronger connection and probably fewer drops and things like that. So I think generally the recommendation would be to make sure you have those ports included in your office so that you don't have to worry about it. It's a lot more expensive to do it later than to just do it when you're building the offices or doing your initial build out. So then your question would be dedicated desks and co-working desks, which are typically the other kind of primary options in a space. So I think there are folks, I know Jerome at Blank Spaces, I don't know if he does it now, but he used to hardwire ports to each of his dedicated desks so that they could have voice over IP phones. And I think he just, you know, had the sense that his membership would demand that. So you could do that in advance. I think that's an expensive route to go without knowing what the demand will be. So try to find out if you're thinking that you really want to get that wired in. The other trick is if you want to rearrange your space and you have those ports hardwired, then that's going to be harder to do too. So you're kind of stuck with your layout. And if you're new to co-working, you probably will end up changing your layout a little bit at some point. And then co-working desks probably just aren't going to have the option for phones because you're probably not going to want to hardwire ports for voice over IP phones over to your co-working desks. I will make a note and say that when I started in 2012, I wasn't planning to do any phone lines, but then I had a few members who requested them. And so I did analog lines through Comcast, and that's kind of a nightmare. You have to run the wires and it's a pain. So I'm not sure where my brain was on voice over IP phones at the time. Maybe it was long enough ago that I didn't realize how easy they were, but I would never do an analog line for a member. Hard to set up, hard to get out of, all those things. So think about where the port should go if you're going to offer them, because if you don't have a port, you're basically not able to offer a phone. I think the other thing to think about is, if somebody's a heavy enough phone user that they're going to be in the open space at a dedicated desk or a co-working seat, you know, do you want them there on the phone? Or do you want to make sure those folks are in offices? We have some loud talker issues in our spaces sometimes and wish that we had funneled some of the phone talkers into offices, which is not always possible because we don't usually have openings in our offices. But it's a tricky thing to manage in the open space. So you may want to kind of not encourage it with voice over IP phones in your open space, but up to you, just something to think about. You know, should you offer the hardware? So the way a voice over IP phone works is that you have a phone. So either you, the space owner, offers it, or the member could have their own phone. And those are, you know, you can order them online. So there's a system that a lot of co-working spaces use called Jive. And if you will include the links in the show notes, which will be at everythingcoworking.com/18. And you can order the phones to give to your members through Jive, and you can set up the service yourself. And if you do this, then you can mark up the service and the phones. You can charge a monthly rate that exceeds what Jive is charging you and make some revenue out of that. Or you can have your member do it themselves if you want to, or if they seem sort of tech savvy enough to do it on their own. Interestingly, sort of my assumption was that this was so common now that everyone is sort of consumerized, that people who needed VoIP phones would know how to get them. But that's, one of my members proved me wrong the other day when he said he had been to another co-working space visiting a friend, and he's like, "Hey, you know, they offer phones there." Like, we had never thought of this, and like, it was impossible. And I kind of gave him the rundown on the process, and he, you know, wasn't aware kind of how to go about doing that himself. So that was a bad assumption. So know that if you did want to offer it as a service and generate a little extra revenue from it, and also just kind of make it a hospitality thing, that you're making it really easy for your members to get phones, then you can do that, and you can sign the contracts through Jive. And I think those are 30-day agreements, so I don't think there's a really long-term commitment. There is a long-term commitment if you buy the phones, the hardware. That's kind of what we've struggled with, is knowing how much inventory to have on hand. Because if you're buying the phone, then you could have units that go unused, and then you've paid for a phone that's not, you know, you're not using and you're not making revenue from. So that's a little bit tricky to figure out, but certainly not insurmountable. Let's see what else. Do they take up a lot of bandwidth? So no, and you actually generally on higher end access points can prioritize voice over IP over your other internet traffic to give them a shot of keeping the connection and not dropping if there is an overload on the system. And, you know, for whatever reason, you can prioritize the voice over IP. We use Meraki access points, and you can do it on those. So that's a tip I would recommend. Although actually, if you're going straight to the switch, then you wouldn't necessarily need to do that. But you can if folks are using them over an IP. And if you don't, so every co-working space should have really great internet service. And we did our day of struggling with Comcast with nothing else available, but we're starting to see other really great services pop up. So we would have phone drops and we would have angry members. So phone usage in a co-working space can be tricky if your internet is not rock solid, because an average user wouldn't care. But if you're on a VoIP phone and there's an internet drop, then that's a major, major issue. And we have since gotten totally away from Comcast, and life is beautiful, and we haven't had a drop since we switched to this other provider. And let's see, can my member take their phone with them? So if they buy the phone, they can take the hardware. You know, it's theirs. If it's yours, you would keep it. The phone number, though, is portable, which is great. So it's, I think even, so Jive can, I think, port other numbers, even a landline number, I think they can port into their system. So if somebody comes to you and was using a phone number at another location, then they can go through the process. It takes a couple of days, though, of getting that number. If the member takes the phone with them, they can keep, I think they just keep their number, which makes it really easy for them to be mobile. Not that you want them to leave, but It's great for them if they're starting a business and, you know, they may think they want to get their own space at some point and they don't want a phone number changed down the line, then a voice over IP number is great because it's totally portable. What else? Advantages of offering phones. If you have the demand for that service, then it's a great, you know, hospitality thing to do for your members, make it super easy. Disadvantages are, well, you have more people on the phone, which you may not want, depending on how your space is laid out. And it's just another thing to manage, which can be a little bit distracting for community managers or operations managers. So that's kind of it on the phones. If you have any specific questions about how those work, again, we'll include the note, the kind of details and the link to Jive in the show notes, but send me an email, jamie@everythingcoworking.com, or put a comment in the show notes and we'll answer those questions. So 24/7 access. Again, this is kind of a random add-on to the phone question, but another common question that folks think about in how to manage their space and probably, you know, debate it, you know, more than once, depending on, you know, things that arise and go on in a space. So you could always change this once you've started, but it's probably good to know it's always hard to make changes on members. People don't like change. Even if you have a strong community, they will not like operational and logistical changes. So try to think this through and know what your stance is on this before you open. Again, this may be something you could do some research on with potential members or pre-sale members to understand what their schedules will be like. But I think in general, here's what I think the first consideration should be on 24/7 access is, you know, if you have members in there when you or your staff are not there, can you sleep at night? And if you are one of those people that cannot sleep at night worrying about what might be happening, then just don't do it. You know, if you don't think you can handle it, then that probably will not change. And just don't do it and people will work around it. And that'll just kind of be a thing. There are spaces that offer it. There are spaces that don't. I'm not sure that anyone would pick a space, you know, based on that unless they have a real specific need to be there at odd hours. So what are some advantages to offering 24/7 access? Well, you may have members who, you know, want to be there when you're not. So if you're not offering 24/7 access, then you're basically saying the space will be locked to members and non-members when there's not a staff person there. So if your staff is there from, you know, 8 to 5 or 8 to 6, or you may, you know, then you're limiting the number, the work hours that folks can be there. And for entrepreneurs and freelancers and whatnot, they may not be, you know, 8-to-5ers or 9-to-5ers. So I know there are spaces like Grind, which is in New York and Chicago, do extended staff hours. They'll have somebody there. I think in New York, they might be there until midnight. So they just have a staff person there. They don't have 24/7 access, but they keep their space open late because in New York, people work late. The city that never sleeps, right? So you can certainly staff to match the hours of your population. So if that's not a profitable approach for you, though, then you need to close when your staff leaves, and that may be challenging for some members. The advantages of that are you can sleep at night and not worry about what's going on in the space when you're not there. The disadvantages may be that you have members who think that's not very flexible and are not crazy about that approach and really want 24/7 access. And I suppose it's possible they would pick another location because of that. So how do I manage 24/7 access operationally? So you can, you know, do a number of things. You would want to think carefully about your access system if you're going to do 24/7 access, because you want to know who's in the space if you offer it in case anything happens. So you would want a fob system so that you get reports of who fobs in and at what time and who fobs out. You can use a keypad system with codes so that your members have codes to the doors, but non-members would not. A downside of that is that typically those don't have any sort of reporting, so you don't know who's entering a code unless each member has an individual code, which is possible for a smaller number of members, but probably gets pretty tough to manage with a larger number of members. And then who knows, you know, but pretty soon someone will come out with a, you know, a phone access system that we can all actually use and that kind of probably will be life-changing. And then you will know very easily who's in the space at any given time. But at the time of this recording, the fob system, I know Liz at Link in Austin actually has your thumbprint, your fingerprint, fingerprint access system. And those can be expensive, but obviously super secure. And I think that's probably how she sleeps at night. I think one of her spaces is not 24/7. And then she has a space that is all dedicated desks and offices, and she makes that 24/7, but has the super secure fingerprint entry system. So, another thing you can do to see who's in the space would be to use access point reports, which can be a little trickier. It depends on how you have people log in, whether that's sort of more automated or manual. And then another question you would ask is, should all members have 24/7 access? So we do 24/7 access in both of our spaces, but you have to be a full-time member. So that means you have to be full-time co-working or dedicated desk or offices. You don't get 24/7 access if you're just doing a day pass, or in Chicago, we offer, at the time of this recording anyway, a 1-day and a 2-day option, and we don't give those folks 24/7 access. So that's an advantage to the higher priced memberships. Let's see, if you're going to do, well, regardless, I'm just going to put a plug in here for security. Security is one of those things that you don't think you need until you really, really need it. We did not have security cameras in our Palo Alto location. It's on the ground floor, and we had a break-in over about a year and a half ago now. So it's a ways back, and there were security cameras in the parking lot and on other buildings. So we actually could see the entire thing on their footage, but we had to go acquire that footage from other folks. So we have since installed security cameras, and we have them in both locations. We also use drop cams, which make it really easy if you just want to flip on your iPhone or whatever mobile phone and pull up their app and see who's in the space. You can use that as well, which might make it a little bit easier to sleep. The problem with that is you don't want to be getting alerts from drop cam in the middle of the night because somebody's walking through the space and having to check it, because that'll disrupt your sleep pretty quickly. So I think that's kind of the big overview on 24/7 access. Again, you just kind of have to decide, can you live with it? And then what kind of demand do you have from your membership to support it? And then just kind of how are you going to manage the logistics around that in terms of entry systems and knowing who's in and out of the space in case something does happen. So if you have any questions or comments, again, the show notes will be at everythingcoworking.com/18. So leave some comments or send an email. I also mentioned on my last podcast, iTunes is doing this funny thing where if you're not subscribed to a podcast, then you can only see the first 20 episodes of a show. And this is episode number 18, so we're about to hit our limit for folks who are not subscribed. So you may want to hit that subscribe button so that you have access to all of the episodes at any given time instead of having to go to the website to listen to anything that you have missed. And then we have a download associated with this episode. So if you are thinking about starting a space or starting a space and you want to know kind of what are the top 10 must-have tools for starting a co-working space, you can snag that PDF at everythingcoworking.com/18download. Thanks again for listening today. And if there are any other topics that we're not covering that you'd like to hear about, or any experts that you think we should be interviewing, we will get back to those expert interviews in a couple of episodes, then shoot me an email at jamie@everythingcoworking.com. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.